County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why this December, we're launching a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka The Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's special episode of TCCP is none other than Lancashire County Cricket Club stalwart, Stephen Croft. So Crofty, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, how's your day been so far, mate?
Yeah, it's been very good. Just cleaning up after Christmas, to be fair. So I've done a couple of tip runs and getting rid of all the toy boxes and stuff. So I'll be glad to get back into Old Trafford. It's been a busy, hectic 2 weeks.
It most certainly has. Always is, isn't it, this time of year, the festive season. It's lovely, though. I must admit, I've really enjoyed spending time with my family, personally speaking, and everyone just seems, you know, that they're a little bit more excited. But for me personally, I always like the running to the county season, you know, when we get to March and April, and it's on the cusp, and county cricket's just about to start. Oh, that's like my Christmas as a cricket badger, but yeah, only 3 months away now until the county season starts. Cannot wait. And I suppose, Crofty, before we get into the chat about cricket and your time at Lancashire and we get into the podcast proper, in terms of the festive season, have you been keeping fit? Have you been keeping the body, the mind fresh during the county cricket off-season?
Yeah, so with end of season, it extended for that 1 week for the disastrous game we had at Lords. We got 6 weeks off, so that the team were back in mid November. I was in a little bit earlier with the academy and EPP coaching them. We had 6 weeks off to refresh, and then it's mainly fitness work. Really, in sort of November, December, a little bit of cricket, the bowlers tick over, but most of the lads tend to just concentrate on the fitness after a tough season and those 6 weeks to refresh. And then it's almost a nice break at Christmas as well, just to stick your feet up as well. We do go quite hard with the fitness, and then a nice little break, and then to get back in it in the new year, lads will be bowling a bit more and hitting a few more balls. And I think like it just breaks up the winter quite nice as well. We usually get a pre-season touring in March as well, so you usually got a run in now to mid-Feb, where you have a week off then again for half term, and then another sort of 6 weeks to go to pre-season tour. So it's usually panned out quite nicely, really.
Oh yeah, very, very well structured, I must admit. But then again, at the same time, for someone who isn't quite familiar with the schedule, they probably think that's quite hectic, but that's part and parcel of the county grind, as we know it here in this country, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's one of those, everyone's in the same boat, really, and it has been that way for a while. And I suppose similarities to football as well, over that festive period, all the games crammed in, and I think a few people say it's a bit too much, but it's been like that for as long as people can remember, and similar with county cricket, really, and especially now with four formats, you've got to squeeze them all in. But I suppose most teams are in similar positions, that you just got to crack on with it, and then the winter, try and prepare as best as you can for a hectic schedule.
100%, yeah. And 2022, Crofty, I must admit, it's got the makings of a very, very interesting county season, to say the least. We'll explore that in a bit more depth as the podcast progresses today. But in terms, just for the new listeners out there, in terms of the content for today's episode, I'm going to be talking to Stephen about his earliest cricketing memories up in Lancashire. Then we're going to be talking, a main focus of the podcast for today's episode will, of course, be talking about the Red Rose. And then we'll end today's episode with a classic round of TCCP teammates. But Crofty, before we get into all of that good stuff then, I want to transport you all the way back to the origins of the Stephen Croft cricketing journey. So what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this wonderful game?
My very first memories actually was going down to Blackpool Cricket Club and watching Lancashire play. I didn't really play that much at that point, really. I was only, I reckon, about 6 years old. And then my first proper memory is my dad getting me a cricket bat. He used to work overseas, so he got me quite a decent cricket bat. And at the time, I was football mad, and I think I used it as a goalpost somewhere and left it out somewhere, which he wasn't too pleased with. But then, yeah, with my father's job, it then took us to Sri Lanka. So we lived out there for nearly 3 years. So yeah, I was educated out there I was about 6.5, 7 years old. So until I was 10 years old, I had 3 years there. And that's where I learned to play cricket, really. Similar to over here, we're football mad. And obviously over there, they were cricket mad, and we were there for the World Cup, I think, which they won. So it was a great place to, well, a great education in cricket, really, to play in Sri Lanka. And yeah, if I'm being honest, when I first got there, I was missing football and being competitive as I am even back then. I wanted to be good at it. So yeah, there was no other choice really to play every day. So yeah, so that's where my journey started really, in Sri Lanka. And then coming back to Blackpool Cricket Club, I seemed a little bit more advanced than the 10-year-olds at the time in Blackpool.
That is remarkable. That is absolutely incredible. That's an amazing journey into the game of cricket. Sri Lanka. I love my Sri Lankan cricket, Crofty. Absolutely. Adore it. We all grew up, in my generation at least, and I suppose everyone in the last few years, with the likes of Jai Wardena, Sangakkara, Dilshan, Malinga, to name but a few. Muralitharan, Harath, one of my absolute all-time favourite spin bowlers. He was one wicket away from surpassing Kapil Dev. I'll never, ever forget that. I wish he just would have played one more test match, just to go at one more in the test rankings. But honestly, a beautiful, beautiful nation, produced so many fantastic cricketers over the years, many of who have appeared in county cricket as well over the course of the last few years. Whereabouts in Sri Lanka was it, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, it was Colombo. So we're in the capital, and I was schooled at Colombo International School, which is really good. They obviously had really good facilities. I think we trained at the SSC, which obviously changed a little bit from now. But I remember going to school sessions, and I think it was Kalawithana, the keeper, who was down there quite a bit. So yeah, at the time I was a sort of keeper batter. So it was nice just to watch him and see him train. It was probably the first sort of eyes I laid on, really, of watching professionals train. And as you do as a youngster, try and mimic players and learn what you can, really. So I felt it was quite a good start to the cricket education, really.
Most certainly is. And what a venue. The SSC in Colombo. Wow. That is absolutely... honestly, I'm a bit speechless. It's class. I love Sri Lanka.
It's not bad for a school gown, really.
No, it's not. It's incredible, because on the podcast, admittedly, a lot of early cricketing journeys have taken a place around one place. You know, your local club, and then you go through the county system. The fact that you went from Blackpool to Colombo, back to Blackpool, into the Lancs Academy, it's amazing. That is genuinely an amazing story. I think that might be one of the most unique ones we've had on over 130 episodes of the podcast. That's remarkable, Crofty. And I have to ask, in terms of, I suppose, the formative years in Sri Lanka, I know a lot of the podcast so far is centered on the island so far, but how did the cricket culture differ, not just from Blackpool, but from England, Wales, the UK? What were the biggest differences in terms of the way that cricket was played, that cricket was revered in Sri Lanka compared to this country?
Well, it was sort of similar to what we get with football, really. So every sort of street corner or bit of spare land, kids were just playing cricket, and not necessarily with bat and balls, just whatever they could find. So similar to us in the playgrounds when we were younger, we'd you'd use a bottle top for a ball if you didn't have one around, or just use anything as a ball. Similar over there, they were just absolutely mad for the game. And I remember going in, we were in a running club as a family, and quite a few English sort of expats out there. So they picked a spot in the country. There's usually around some paddy fields, and then all the adults go off, and one usually stays around with the cars. So they're usually somewhere with land, and I used to say, "Can I stay and play with the local lads at cricket?" And we all enjoyed it, and I was just quickly turned into one of my loves, really, alongside football, and tried to play anywhere I could as well. So that was before school and break times, after school, and it was, like I said, it was a great education, really, because at the time we started school pretty early, really, and then we were sort of finished by 12:30, 12:45, because it was so hot. So then you had the afternoon to do what you want, really. So we obviously played a lot of cricket and swam and a little bit of football here and there, but there was plenty of time to do what you love, really.
Honestly, Crofty, I'm a slight bit envious. Don't get me wrong, I love my beloved Warwickshire. I'll always sing Warwickshire's praises, but what a cricketing journey that is. You know, going to Sri Lanka, an absolute bastion of the game of cricket, those wonderful memories as well. That is absolutely amazing. And in terms of those formative years, you had a lot of role models, icons, idols to choose from, not just from a Sri Lankan perspective or an English one, but in the game, the 90s, late 80s, early 2000s, fantastic, fantastic players have graced our game throughout each of those eras and decades. In those formative years, who were your real role models? Did you have anyone in the game of cricket that you tried to look up to, emulate, try to model your game off of in those early years, per se?
Nothing really too early. I remember, obviously, the Kalawithana was in Sri Lanka and always at the SSC, so I always kept an eye on him. And obviously, when I grew up, didn't sort of then realise how sort of an innovator, and him and sort of Jai Warner opening the bat, not Jai Warner, sorry, Jai Surya, watching them play, and then having the opportunity to play with Jai Surya as well later in my career with Lancashire. It's one of those you sit back and thought that was pretty special. Sorry, at the time you're quite young and think, oh, it's nice to play with him. But when you sort of really realise that I grew up watching these people on TV, it was special to actually play with them. It probably wasn't till I came back to England, really, that I started having some cricket idols. And Andrew Flintoff just played at the club down the road at St Anne's. I was at Blackpool, so I saw him sort of go through the ranks of the Northern League and then very quickly onto Lancashire and England. And from then on, I thought, well, if a lad from St Anne's can do it, I can try and give it a go. And it's almost seemed really accessible and something that could be possible, really. So Fred was a really early sort of idol of mine and someone who just played down the road as well.
Yeah, he's a common choice here on the podcast. Absolutely fantastic, fantastic cricketer. Could do it all, couldn't he? And not only that, a fantastic character, as we've seen with various TV shows. He's now host of Top Gear, isn't he, as well? Brilliant, brilliant cricketer, quality bloke. I still remember the 2014 blast as well. Obviously, at the time, as a Bears fan, wasn't too happy with him getting my icon, Ian Bell, out. But it was just a remarkable moment. I mean, he's an English cricketing hero. Everybody knows Freddie Flintoff, great character, great personality. Always turned up for the Ashes as well. Yeah, good role model. I must admit there, Croft, in there. Yeah, you got to play with him in the years that followed. That's pretty incredible, to say the least. And in terms of Lancs then, when did that moment really hit home? The fact that you thought you could be a professional cricketer. When did you start, you know, really taking the dream seriously? What age did you almost realise that professional cricket was the life goal for you personally?
Yeah, so it was cricket and football sort of juggled until I was about 16, really. I sort of got into Lancashire set up around sort of under 14s, 15s. The earliest sort of years, there was Lancashire teams playing. I never seemed to get in them, and it almost then spurred me on a bit, and and thought, right, I'll try and show what I've got, and went back to club cricket to try and prove myself, which I thought was an early sort of, it was a good lesson really, didn't sort of dwell on it, and it spurred me on. And then with football, I trialled around a little bit, sort of playing for Blackpool Town, and at the time went down to trials at Wimbledon when they were in the Premiership, I think, and yeah, nothing seemed to come about. Trialled around a bit and then sort of ripped my cartilage in my knee. So then on leaving school, played a few sort of reserve team games for the local sort of decent Saturday side. And yeah, it wasn't sort of, because then I was playing first team cricket as well for Blackpool, and I was getting more enjoyment playing against like the professionals and testing yourself then. So it's probably when I sort of left school, thought, right, I want to play cricket, and then sort of give up the football and really concentrated on my cricket. And then sort of a good timing really. I had sort of 1 year out of school when I went to college and worked, and then Lancashire started their academy up when I was about 17, 18. So I thought it was good timing there. And then, yeah, it went from there really. John Stanworth, who was then the academy director, felt put a lot of faith in me and time and someone I still speak to this day. And yeah, it went from there really to academy, then a scholarship, and then a full-time contract.
Well, as you said, relatively late, not to the same extent as Keith Barker, who did professional football, didn't he? I mean, we've had Barks on the podcast. Yeah. He literally became a professional footballer and then went into cricket, which is absolutely insane, to say the least. And listeners, you can find that on the podcast website. It's one of our most recent episodes here in TCCP, but relatively late then. But at the same time, Crofty, I have to ask, in terms of your debut, first of all, what do you remember from your first team debut for Lancs? Do you remember the day? Do you remember your scores? Do you remember just how important that day was to you in terms of your cricketing journey?
Yeah, I remember it was my first class sort of my debut was a uni game. I think it was Oxford, 2005. But yeah, then I remember especially my championship game, and that was a couple of years later against Worcester at Old Trafford. And it wasn't until then. I sort of count that one as my debut, really, the championship one. And yeah, I really remember the game. Wasn't too much nervous, really. I felt like I had a few good years in the second team. And then with the team we had, made me feel so much at ease coming into that side. People like sort of Warren Hegg and Dominic Cork at the time. I think we had Brad Hodge and Murrelly. They just made you feel so comfortable as a youngster coming in. And something that I've never forgotten, really, and something that I try and do now as a senior player to try and sort of comfort those younger players, know that there's some nerves around, but just let them know that they're there on merit, and try and make that sort of side, the off-field stuff, as easy as possible, and try and make them just concentrate on cricket. But yeah, I remember the game. Yeah, cover drove Caviarelli a couple of times, and then he hit me on the head. Yeah, I think he got 20, 21 or 24, and then not too many in the second innings. But yeah, it was nice. That was a championship game at Old Trafford as well. And then, yeah, I think T20, similar. I was sort of an aggressive batter / seamer back then. And yeah, I think it was away at Derby. Yeah, and Fred was in the side then, and similar just made me feel at ease and backed you and yeah, still remember that game. Yeah, not so many runs, couple of wickets, but yeah, seemed a long time ago now.
I'll tell you what though, you do raise a very, very good point there for senior players, not just in county cricket, but cricket dressing rooms up and down the country. When you have got these young players coming through the ranks, you do have to be, you know, that little bit more supportive, don't you? You are almost the role model, I suppose, in that dressing room. You've got to put them on the right path. You've got to give them clarity. You've got to give them, not wrapping them up in cotton wool, but the arm around the shoulder, don't you? You've got to make them feel as though they're welcome, part of the dressing room, and put them on the right steps in their respective cricketing journeys.
Yeah, definitely. And it's always tough. There's always competition for places. But if you're in it for the right reasons and you're putting the team first, and not just that, the person in question who is playing, just try and make them feel comfortable. And there's always going to be nerves around, and just trying to, like you said, just make them feel at ease. And yeah, I think just about doing the right thing, really. And I know sometimes in sport that does get lost with competition and sort of people maybe sometimes looking for their own career or their own sort of goals. But I think it's always come back to trying to do what's best for the team and the squad and for that guy as a person, really.
Absolutely, Crofty. Could not have put that better myself, to be completely honest. And yeah, you mentioned there about the team, the side, Lancashire County Cricket Club, one of the biggest teams here in England and Wales, 8 times county championship winners, and then they had the shared one in 1950, didn't they, as well? A massive, massive club. You've got Old Trafford as your home ground as well, along with some beautiful outgrounds. Egbeth, I went there this year. Absolutely gorgeous. But what does Lancashire County Cricket Club mean to you, Percy Crofty, as someone who was born and bred in Lancs, in Blackpool? What does it mean to you every single time you go out onto that field and represent Lancashire County Cricket Club?
I call it my home, really. It's probably the most place I've spent my whole life, really. Having sort of, in later years, sort of moved and renovated a few houses, I've probably not been in one place longer than I have at Old Trafford, to be fair. So, yeah, all my adult life, I've spent nearly all the summers there and winters there training. And yeah, it's like a home for me, really. And all my teammates, I've never really had a brother. Well, I haven't got a brother. So yeah, all my teammates have acted as brothers as well and family members. And yeah, like I said, I've spent all my adult life there, really. And it's a lot of time, but it's been enjoyable. Like you said, there's not many better places to play your cricket, really. I was watching a video a couple of weeks back that we showed to the academy about how good the ground is and the development over the years and what's to come. And I was getting goosebumps watching it myself, thinking I still get to play on that ground. And it's an amazing venue and still excites me to this day going out there and playing.
Well, that is absolutely fantastic to hear. It really is, Crofty. I imagine the Lancs fans right now got a nice grin on their face. I know my Lancastrian co-host, unfortunately, he's not here today, Joe. But yeah, I imagine he'll be happy listening to that as the episode comes out. I must admit, I do like Lancs. I know me and Joe, we have our bands here on the podcast because my county in the last few years, we have had the wood over Lancs across different formats. And yeah, the Bobbilish Trophy was a testament to that this year. But honestly, I do like Lancs in terms of the, not just the club itself, but you know, the club system in the county. The fact that basically anyone can go and if they're talented enough, be a part of Lancashire County Cricket Club. And then you've got the ground itself. Old Trafford is iconic. It really is a fantastic ground. I went there in 2019 for the World Cup, South Africa versus Australia. Brilliant, brilliant atmosphere. Absolutely love it. You've got the old pavilion. You've got this beautiful, beautiful, iconic landmark as well with the point, which just makes Old Trafford stand out. It's a great place to go and watch cricket. It really is. And imagine, Crofty, for you, incredibly special to call it your own summer home. Same with me in Edgbaston. I mean, I feel like I spent half the, well, not just half the summer, feels like half the year. It feels like about 6-7 months. Edgbaston, at one point, you're going to have to crowbar me out of the seats. I'm there that often. But that is why we love county cricket, isn't it? We've got beautiful venues. You've got good cricket being played. And not only that, people in county cricket, for the most part, are very nice people. So if you can go and watch Lancs, Warwickshire, Derbyshire, Sussex, Kent, whoever, just go and support your local county. That is the overarching message from me here at the County Cricket Podcast. But talking of Lancashire in particular, Crofty, there is one game every single year which means more to Lancashire fans than any other. And that is, of course, the Roses match. Lancashire versus Yorkshire, arguably, through gritted teeth, it is the biggest rivalry here in England and Wales. It depends where you're from. Middlesex versus Surrey, their members might argue it's the London Derby. But in terms of prime time Sky Sports, it's always the Roses match. and they are fantastic, gripping and compelling encounters. Even if you're not a Lancashire or a Yorkshire fan, they always just seem to offer up so much drama, entertainment, carnage. It really is a fantastic game to watch as a fan or indeed as a neutral. But in terms of yourself as a Lancastrian, Crofty, what does the Roses match mean to you personally? Just how special is that game when it appears on the calendar?
Yeah, it's very special. As soon as the fixture's out, it's always one we look out for. And whether it be T20 or the county championship. Last year, we were due to play it down at Scarborough, which would have been a great game, and it got moved with the COVID protocols. But we were really excited about that. It's one of those. There's so much rivalry going on, and I know a lot of it's with the fans, and we don't actually mind the Yorkshire lads as people, really. They're quite sort of similar with us Northern lads, and we get on off the pitch. It's not. It obviously gets a bit fiery on the pitch, but it's all respectable off it. But it's a massive fixture for us, and especially those T20 games. We've had some belters over the last decade, really, and it's having not been an international cricketer, it definitely has that feel of international cricket. There's a full ground, there's fireworks, there's the flames going off, and there's beer snakes, and it's such a great atmosphere. Luckily, we've come out on top most of the time, which is nice as well. But plenty of great fixtures and plenty of international players on show, and it's been a great spectacle for the game, really. And I think cricket needs, or all sport needs, some rivalries, and it seems to be one of the biggest around.
Yeah, admittedly, I know I do have my Bears bias, but it is the biggest here in England and Wales, absolutely. You can just see with the Sky Sports promo, you can see how much it means to players, both current and former. The Roses match just means that bit more. It almost is like an international match, as you rightfully said. I mean, the crowds are fantastic, great atmosphere, really lively, fantastic entertainment on the field. It's something, to be honest, even though I'm a Warwickshire fan, I would like to experience one day. I might have to do that in 2022 if the tickets haven't sold out. But in terms of those Roses matches over the year, Crofty, what do you say has been your favourite moment from a Lancs versus Yorkshire match? Is there one moment in particular, a highlights per se, which really stands out to you above any other match?
I think the 2011 year was obviously a special year. Waiting 77 years to win a county championship at a club like Lancashire was obviously a very long time, but it was very, very sort of long overdue. But it was still a lot of hard work, and one will stick with that group of players forever, really. So the Roses game in that year was, like most of the games, quite a tight one. And yeah, it was one of those years, and especially one of those games where you feel like that unity gets you over the line. You know each other inside out. You know the guy next to you is going to do your job. And it was at Liverpool as well. Great outground. We played that most of the year. And it just felt such a good team effort, and I can't even remember who did what in that game. It felt like everyone just chipped in here and there and got us over the line. I know we had Jimmy that game as well, who it seems gives this exact same passion he does with three lines on his chest and as when he has that rose on his chest as well. So it was one of those games where it was a nail biter. We got over the line, but the whole year was like that. But to do it against Yorkshire at Liverpool as well was a really special game.
Most certainly was. And 2011, as a year for Lancashire County Cricket Club, was incredibly special as well. And I'm so, so happy you brought this up, Crofty, because I know the Lancs fans out there will want to learn a bit more about that incredible year for the club. As you rightfully said, 77 years it took for Lancs from 1934 to 2011 to be the outright winners of the county championship. It's a massive, massive drought for a club of Lancashire's size, calibre and quality. I have to ask, from that season, before we talk about that fateful final day against Somerset, what do you think made that team in 2011 so special? What do you think it was about that particular unit, that group of players, which made them so successful in that season?
I think just to touch on it earlier, where I think we just had a great unity, really. Most of us, if you put it on paper, it probably wasn't our, it was our weakest squad for quite a while, really, if it was on paper with sort of bare cricket statistics. But we'd, a lot of that team was made up of local lads who'd all come through our youth system. Some of them sort of pre-academy, but we've played youth cricket together, played a lot of second team cricket together. So we were quite inexperienced on paper, really, but we played with each other for years. So going into that year, we were sort of, I think, favourites to get relegated, which was another sort of spur for us to do well. We were out of Old Trafford, really, as well, while that was getting renovated, and we were in a bit of financial trouble, I think, as well, with, I think, one of the banks, maybe, but I think they wanted a loan being paid back. So we were in a bit of financial trouble. I think we had a small squad of 16, 17, which, as a player at that point, it felt quite good, really, knowing that there was going to be an opportunity for the squad. You just thought maybe the staff wanted some more strength and depth. But and we had a great overseas in Maharouf, who I think came over pretty cheap because Sri Lanka were over and he wanted to get in the test side. So he had a great incentive to come over and perform. But I think, yeah, that the main reason being that unity and togetherness we had as a side. Like I mentioned, that Yorkshire game, we got on a good early roll, which helps. We won, I think, the first three games against some good sides. And then, yeah, it just seemed like we had a lot of nail biters, which we generally came out on top of. I remember Simon Kerrigan putting his hand up so much that year. And I think you look at most players and they won a game here or there, or we all chipped in here and there. It wasn't sort of down to one man getting 1,500 runs or one guy getting 80, 90 wickets. I think we all sort of got around the sort of 800, 900,000 runs, plenty getting 20, 30, 40, 50 wickets. Like I said, it was a relatively small squad, but that, I think, togetherness brought it all together, really.
It most certainly did. And it was an incredible, incredible finish to the season as well. You mentioned about nail biters. The final round, a bit like this year, in 2021, and we'll talk about that later in the podcast, but it was so, so tight at the top, wasn't it? It was basically a three-horse race. So you had Lancs, Warwickshire were playing Hampshire, and Durham as well. Durham had a fantastic season that year. I think they beat us in terms of our two counties, Lancs and Warwickshire. Pretty sure they beat us home and away, if I'm not mistaken, in that season. They actually had a very, very good year. But yeah, the 2011 County Championship, day four against Somerset in Taunton, Crofty, the fateful day when the 77-year drought was finally, finally broken. What can you tell us about your experiences on that day in terms of even maybe before a ball was bowled? Were you confident that you could secure the trophy on that day?
If we're being honest, no. At the start of the day, we thought we could win this game. Similar to when the game this year at Egbeth against Hampshire, we thought, well, we'll just do our part and then hopefully Hampshire can do something against, I think it was your boys, Warwickshire, wasn't it? So, yeah, we were going in really confident of winning that game. I think we were set somewhat to win, obviously, on that day, yeah, and Gary Keady had the famous run out. But, yeah, we knew, right, let's just do our part and then we'll see what happens. I think the odds were against us slightly, but yeah, as the day wore on, I just think that our attitude and how positive we were obviously just put us in good stead as the hours ticked down. And then, yeah, Keats went out, I think it was Jamal Hussain, and then, right, we had a run chase of, I think it might have been about 230 in not too many overs, and Somerset was trying to slow things down as well. But once we got a good opening stand with Morey and Hortz, we were basically home from there, really. And I don't think many people were looking at the scoreboards around the country either. I think it was about, we needed about 50 to win, and me and Brown were about at the time, heard a load of sort of cheering in the crowd, and we thought, well, actually must have drawn down at the, I think it was the Rose Bowl it was then. So I think it was on, from then on in, we started to get excited, and we were both out in the middle saying, oh, let's try and get this over and done with and get in the changing room. But yeah, it's such a special moment, obviously for us as the players, but as a club and as the fans, I think we soon realised that we obviously got to go to Buckingham Palace, which was great. We took the trophy to Old Trafford and to the Etihad Stadium, which was fantastic. And I think it wasn't till then we started to do the small cricket clubs, take the trophy around there, and I think that's when it hit home how much it really meant to our supporters and fans, that people coming up to say they've been waiting a lifetime and met the odd person who was alive who saw the last win as well. I think I went on the radio with a chap who saw both wins, which was must have been quite rare. But to go around the clubs and see how much it meant to the fans was I think that's when it really sunk in for a few of us to think what such special achievement we did with a bunch of good young local Lancashire lads.
Well, it was an extraordinary achievement for Lancashire in 2011, and that's a remarkable story. I don't think there would have been many people, would there, when you think about it, because it was 1934. That would have been the first one in terms of that drought, I suppose, not Lancashire's first ever title. Then you had the shared one with Surrey in 1950. And 2011, I don't think there would have been many people who would have remembered all three, but that's pretty cool, to be fair. I mean, that's a pretty nice life well lived for a Lancs fan, seeing three county championship wins out of a possible nine. That's not bad at all.
Yeah.
And just in terms of that winning moment, Crofty, I know it's very, very cliche for me to ask this, and you can never really describe the moment, but what was going through your head? Did you realise at that moment, you've said afterwards when you're going around the clubs, going around Manchester and seeing what the reaction was like with the fans, but in that moment, hitting the winning runs to secure the biggest trophy of them all for Lancashire County Cricket Club, your boyhood club, did it sink in at that moment? Or again, did it take a little bit longer to process the full extent of what you did on that day?
Probably didn't truly sink in for a while, really, because we had so many tight games. It just felt like we were on a bit of a roll that year. And yes, we won the championship, and it was almost a bit of relief, really. It wasn't sort of, I don't know, I wouldn't say it was unexpected, because we won so many games that year and so many tight ones. But I suppose the first one, when you get off the field, obviously you're ecstatic, you won the game, and yes, you won the championship, but it almost felt a relief to hear that, is it going to be your year this year? And I've not been around too long then, but every season was, right, you're going to win it this year, you're going to win this year. So there was almost that sense of relief that we've actually won it, won't get those questions again. But yeah, it didn't truly sink in until probably the winter, really, that it was such a special achievement.
Yeah. Oh, honestly, it's amazing, isn't it? Winning the county championship, I know from experience this summer, it still hasn't sunk in, to be honest, as a Bears fan. It's the big one, isn't it? It's the big fish in county cricket. It's the one that you dream of. And when you think that the championship has been going on since 1890, and there are three counties, Somerset, Northamptonshire, Gloucestershire, who've never even experienced that moment, unfortunately. Fingers crossed that they get to in the future. But it's the massive one. It's what everybody wants. It's the big trophy. I know we've got T20 Blast, we've got Finals Day, and that is outstanding as well. The One Day Cup's always held a very, very special place in my heart as well. But the County Championship is remarkable. It's like winning the Premier League in football. It's absolutely massive. And the reason why I don't think it sinks in, and Crofty, this might actually, you know, I'm not going to say blow your mind, but it might give you some perspective. When you think about it, in Lancashire's history, think of all the players who've come before you, year in, year out, hundreds of players. And on that day, you were part of an 11, which makes up 99 players in Lancashire's entire history who've experienced that moment. It's remarkable. It's a massive, massive achievement, and one which, to be honest, sticks with people for life. I guarantee there are fans up and down the country who still remember that moment. I mean, even here in the Midlands, the amount of people who say, oh, remember that time when Stephen Croft hit the winning runs and broke Warwickshire's hearts. It's a really, really incredible milestone, a great achievement for the club. And Lancashire fans will hopefully get that opportunity again in some of the next few years to come, because it is remarkably special. It really is. But moving on then from 2011 Crofty, because that has been a large chunk of today's episode, and it had to be, because it was an incredible season for Lancs as a club. You had a couple of, as a club I'm speaking about now, you had a couple of less than ideal seasons with the relegations. Lancs did kind of struggle a bit. I mean, in the White Ball Arena, you did quite well in 2014 with the T20 Blast, unfortunately finishing second best to my Bears in 2014 at Edgbaston. But 2015, finals day, which was very, very interesting indeed. Gavin Griffiths, for example, made his T20 debut, didn't he, in the semi-final on that fateful day at Edgbaston. What can you remember about the 2015 T20 campaign? What were the highlights, the real special moments for you, personally speaking?
Yeah, another great year for the club and for me personally as well. So, yeah, one of my favourite ones to go with 2011. But yeah, it was once again a special club effort, really. Having, I think at the time, and we're probably still around that figure now, we'd probably won the most games without winning the trophy. I think in the world, we were up there for games won. And percentage-wise, games won in world cricket in T20 without actually winning the title as well. So we had that sort of little bit of monkey on our back that we'd come close so many times and just missed out. And similar to that 2011 side, we had a side packed full of academy lads that had come through our academy and a few good signings from other clubs as well, who were at the time quite unknown, as in George Edwards. And we had a tremendous pro in James Faulkner, who I think we got him at probably a peak of his career, just won the World Cup for Australia. And he was so good to have around that unit, really. He's a confident lad and just radiates energy with everyone, really. And sort of put those young lads at ease and really backed them. And he obviously performed outstandingly well on the field, but he fitted into our sort of club and the culture we wanted to bring. And yeah, it was another one. It was sort of a bit of relief when we won that one as well. Obviously, we were ecstatic and we celebrated really well. But to get our first sort of T20. Trophy win was really special, and to captain that group of lads as well was something I'll never forget and I learned plenty from as well.
Yeah, it was a great day for the club, wasn't it? An incredibly, incredibly special day. Beating Northants by 13 runs, first T20 blast, trophy success. And yeah, that record, I was going to bring that up actually, with regards to Lancs. I mean, you kept on winning so many games, but it was the knockouts, wasn't it? That was the issue.
Yeah.
That went all the way back to the 1990s. If I'm not mistaken, in List A and T20 cricket.
Yeah, it seemed to be a bit of a trend. We'd storm the group and then, yeah, either fall at the quarters or at finals day, where, yeah, it was something frustrating. And I suppose I think this year it might change slightly, as in there's not too much of a break with the group stages to quarters and then finals day. But it was the same for everyone, I suppose, and I suppose it had to reset. And you touched on it a little bit about the years sort of after that championship win. Similar, we obviously were in form that year, but obviously didn't reset our markers, and we had a few lean years. But yeah, it was moving forward, and it was great for that bunch of lads, and it was sort of a catapult for the 2015 I'm talking about now. Catapult for like Alex Davis, I think that was his first sort of full year, and Liam Livingston I remember we try to get those lads in, and like Gavin Griffiths, who had his debut in the semi-final, we knew he was ready. And then, yeah, his first over, I think, was a wicket maiden to James Vince. So it was he started off obviously really well, but yeah, it was a sort of a great starting point for a few of their careers, and obviously as a club as a whole as well, to get that win was very special.
Absolutely. Most certainly was. And I'm glad you brought up Alex Davis, because didn't he score 47 from 20 odd balls? He was very, very good in that final against Northampton. I think we all know a certain Liam Livingston in terms of the way in which he's progressed in his career. Absolutely remarkable cricketer. One of the best in England and Wales, without a shadow of a doubt, in the white ball formats. And Crofty, you touched upon it earlier. You were the captain for that day. So skippering your side, your boyhood club, to success in the T20 Blast in 2015. You then became the club captain for 2016 and 2017. I have to ask in retrospect, just how momentous and how much of a privilege was that for you personally to be named as the captain of Lancashire County Cricket Club? Because when you think of the names that have come before you, the Glenn Chappells, the Wazzy McGrams, the David Lloyds, Brian Statham, Archie McLaren, I mean, I could name a few more, to be honest, but you think of all the great names who have come before you and captained this illustrious club. How special was that for you personally as a Lancastrian lad?
Yeah, it was up there, really, from obviously you playing your debut game, and then to be a first team regular and then get capped. But then to be club captain was something really special. And yeah, something I'll never forget. You go past the honours board and you see your name up there, and it'll be up there forever. And yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed my time as a captain. I started doing it really in 2011, really, when Chappie wasn't available. I wasn't sort of an official vice, but I did it when Chappie wasn't available. So I felt like I had a good grounding in it. Basically, the whole 2015 year, Tom Smith unfortunately got quite a serious back injury, so I think he did the first game and then got injured. So it was had a great sort of grounding into it, and then yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed my time and very, very proud. And like you said, some of those names there are greats of the game, and yeah, I feel so proud that had a really good crack at it. I think in total did over 100 games for my county, so it's something that hopefully put me in good stead in the future. Hopefully, go into some coaching and those leadership roles that I've got some great experience and memories through captaining. But yeah, thoroughly enjoyed that sort of part of my career.
Well, that is wonderful to hear, Crofty. It really is. And before we talk about the coaching, the 2021 season as well, just a follow-up question about captaincy for you personally. What do you think is the most important role of a captain in cricket?
Personally, I think to inspire your teammates and take your teammates with you, presuming you've picked the right captain, the right person to do it, and get that bit out of them. And when they may be done or maybe tired, just to inspire others to get that last bit of energy out of them or whatever it might be. I was a believer as well. You want your captain to still be contributing as well. Something that obviously Joe Root's done if the last year, unfortunately, the team's not backed him up really. But yeah, I see captaincy as trying to sort of get the best out of people. And I think doing that, I think you'd, on the whole, have to be a good people person, know those guys next to you and try and form a good relationship to know what works for different people. You might need to give one of your fast bowlers a kick up the arse, and then the one at the other end, he might need the arm around his shoulder because you might lose him if you shout at him. So yeah, I think it's a tough job, but yeah, I think it's when you get it right, it's so valuable to a team and to a group of players to try and inspire them and pull them together But yeah, I think yeah to pull them together and still perform yourself as a captain as well. I feel that's a big part of it as well.
It most certainly is. And when you think of the importance of cricket captains over the years, more recently, we look at the likes of an Owen Morgan, an MS Dhoni, Kane Williamson, but another Lancashire great, Clive Lloyd, an absolute titan for the West Indies, an outstanding captain in what was such a talented team. And we go back onto that shared theme, which is individuality. You know, it's not that one-size-fits-all approach. You have to know each individual member of the team, basically, you know, in terms of the way you're going to deal with them, how to get the best out of them when things don't go quite their way. Do you put the arm around the shoulder? Do you give them the, not the hairdryer treatment, but, you know, do you be a little bit harder with them? It's a very, very demanding task. And in particular, when you go into the professional level and the international level beyond, just as Joe Root is experiencing right now, there is additional pressure. But it's also an incredibly rewarding one, isn't it? Because you are the focal point of the team. You are the one that when things are getting tough, when your backs are against the wall, you expect the captain to lead by example. And that's why captains can etch out their names in the halls of cricketing history for the rest of time. I think it's quite cool, to be honest, in cricket, compared to a sport like football or rugby or any other ones where you need to be a captain. Hockey is another one, for example. The cricket captain really, I think, exists in a world of its own. Would you agree, Crofty?
Yeah, definitely. I think you sort of align yourself with the coach as well and a few of their beliefs. And there's so much you can influence on the field that I think once you step over that line, the coach isn't there, or the batting coach or whatever, it's down to you and your players. And sometimes, yeah, you might need to reiterate things or direct. And you have got so much influence within sort of bowling changes, setting fields, and it's sort of quite a hands-on job, really. And you can obviously make it as hands-on as you want. And there's, like you said, there's some greats that have done it. And yeah, no more, I suppose. And Owen Morgan as well, someone of recent times who sort of changed the look of our one-day side, really, and sort of a great innovator, and always sort of admired him watching how he sort of controls the side as well. It's, like you said, it's a very rewarding job. Things can come down quickly, and if you don't get it right or the team doesn't get it right, but like you said, the flip side of it is it when it is a well-oiled machine, it can be a great job.
Most certainly can. And again, for any young aspiring captains out there, Owen Morgan, a great one to use as an example, as is MS Dhoni, Kane Williamson, Clive Lloyd as well. I'll keep on bringing him up. I think he's one of the best captains ever, in my opinion. And yeah, it's a fantastic role. And that again, is one of the reasons why I quite like cricket. It's the flexibility of the captain. You know, you've actually got quite a lot more power compared to other sports. I've always just found that fascinating, to be honest, in comparison to other games around the world. And talking of captains' performances, this is a lovely segue into the last stages of our chat, Crofty. But 2021, the final game of the season for Lancs, talking of captains, Dane Vilas, he sweeps. That was an iconic piece of commentary from that incredible game up at Egbert. What can you tell me about the running in 2021 in what was one of the closest county cricket finishes we've had probably since 2016? What was the mood like in the camp after you'd won that game up in Egbert?
It was bizarre, really. We're obviously ecstatic and we're very emotional because it was just that potential of winning the county championship, but we had to wait. But similar to that 2011, we just thought, right, let's do our job, and then hopefully Somerset, it's a they can hopefully get a result or grind something out. But we just wanted to and desperately obviously wanted to get that win, which we did. It was hard work in the end. Sort of we knew there was going to be a twist, and I think it was Parky and Dane there at the end. Just grateful Dane was still there, obviously led by example. But it was so sort of emotional, that not just the game, but after as well. something for me as well. As a senior player, it goes through your head, is this potentially the last championship I might win, or if it comes or if it doesn't? But there's things like that going through, especially my head, thinking, right, this might be your last championship or your last opportunity to get this close to it. But yeah, we're coming out of that game, we held our heads high and thought, we've done all we can, and what will be, will be. And there's obviously, as the dust settled a bit, there's a little bit of sort of bitterness at Somerset and things like that they got sort of knocked over a bit. But I think then looking back, when after time you have to look at your own performances throughout the year, thinking, well, where could we have influenced better, or where could we have got more points? Or so I think it's easy to sort of point a finger at what went wrong on that last day for the Warwickshire Somerset game. But I think if we look internally and thought, well, what could we have done? And there's points over the season where you think, right, we could have done that a little bit better, or this set or the other, like most seasons. And I think that's where we're at with it at the minute. We obviously gave it a great shot, and obviously the sort of slight dampener on the season end was the Lord's game. I think we'd gone through a lot physically and emotionally that last game. I didn't think we probably were, I wouldn't say up for that game, but I think we were a bit mentally fried and emotionally fried from the week before, really.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, well, I wasn't actually there at Lord's, unfortunately. I wasn't able to go for the Bob Willis Trophy final, but you could just kind of sense there wasn't that same energy that Lancs had had throughout the entire season. And it was a very un-Lancashire-like performance, I must admit, because when we played up at Old Trafford earlier in the divisional round, it was a fantastic game, in particular Josh Bohannon with that immense 170. It did just seem, I don't know, a bit flat, to be honest, but it's understandable. I imagine it would have been incredibly, incredibly disappointing. You've came so far, you've gotten so close to the ultimate prize. But then again, I suppose, as you said, once the dust has settled, as you go into this season, you can take the positives away. Because that Lancs side, you've got an incredibly, incredibly good blend, to be honest, of youth and experience. I think Phil Salt is a fantastic addition. I know Alex Davis is obviously a big loss, but it's a good group of lads. And Matt Parkinson continues to impress year in, year out. I'd say that Josh Bohannon's definitely in the England conversation heading into 2022. And beyond, you've got a good, you know, bunch of young lads coming up through the system as well. I don't know, I think 2022, I expect Lancs to be competing yet again and just take the positives from 2021 into that campaign. But Crofty, before we end talking about 2022, we do, of course, just have a couple of segments for the meantime, one of which is our Twitter questions. We did have a Twitter question for today, which is from Oliver Prendergast, and I love this question. Crofty, do you wish that you had trademarked the back-to-front cap / double cap wearing?
I should have, actually, yeah. It's latched on around the world, yeah. Yeah, I only suppose that I did that. I didn't really want to fancy running 70 yards at the start of every over. But yeah, I should have trademarked that now, looking back. Could have got a good bit of exposure for that.
Certainly could have. In fact, in 2020, I did the older back-to-front cap. And I think I actually did quite well in the next session, if I'm not mistaken. I think I got my mate out three times. So yeah, that might be coming back in 2022. It's a fashion statement, to say the least.
Yeah, well, I think that's why I think the first time I did it, I got a wicket as well. So I was a little bit superstitious. I think, wow, I'll do it again.
See, that's why I love cricket as well, the superstitions. Everyone has one, don't they? Yeah. They have these weird little intricacies in the game that no one ever knows about, but they exist. And if you don't do it, you feel as though you're not going to achieve in the game. It's a funny, funny game, the game of cricket. And then, Crofty, that is our Twitter question for today. So thank you to Oliver Prendergast for getting that in. But in terms of our concluding segment then for today's episode, I alluded to it right at the start of the podcast. We do, of course, have TCCP teammates. So for our new listeners out there, how the segment works, I've got an assortment of questions for Crofty to answer about his teammates that he shares a dressing room with up at Old Trafford. So, Stephen Croft, are you ready for TCCP teammates?
Yes, mate.
Fantastic. Well, we get off to a good start, I must admit, here with today's teammate segment, with an absolute classic here at the County Cricket Podcast. Crofty, who is the teacher's pet at Lancashire County Cricket Club? Who's always hanging around the coaches, per se?
I don't know, really. Not really got too many like that. I suppose the spinners stay tight, Crowy. So Tom Hartley. He loves a chat with Crowy. But yeah, it's mainly just boring bowling stuff, really.
Fair enough then. So Tom Hartley, we need to get Tom on the podcast, actually. So Tom, if you're listening, that invitation is definitely open for 2022. We need to make that happen. Moving on to our next question, Crofty. Who is Mr. Hard as Nails in the Lancashire dressing room? Who would you not want to mess with, necessarily?
Probably Liam Hurt. He's a big chap, and everything about him, really. He can be quite scary. Big hands. He's a plumber as well by trade, so he's got a pretty big toolbox. Big hands. He looks like a rugby player, really. So I'll probably stay clear of Liam Hurt.
What an apt name as well, Liam Hurt for Mr. Hard as Nails. Fantastic. Moving on to our next one, Crofty, the first of our musically themed questions here on today's podcast. Who is the dressing room DJ?
It's Rob Jones, actually. Yeah, he's got a good variety from probably 70s upwards. So Jones is probably he's not everyone's cup of tea, but he tries to please everyone.
That's an important thing. You don't just want one genre. You need to keep the dressing room behind your back. So fair enough, Rob Jones.
Yeah, I think someone Luke Wood's guilty of that. Some of his taste is terrible.
We've had that quite often on the podcast at Warwickshire with Henry Brooks. He always puts some drum and bass on and no one wants it in the dressing room. Moving on to our next question then, Crofty. Who is the karaoke king at Lancs and what is their go-to choice of song?
It's probably our new director of cricket, Mark Chilton. Anything Oasis. In the past, he'd bring his guitar on away trips, and he's quite good, to be fair. So, yeah, usually gets drowned out. It's usually a sing-along, but yeah, Chilly's quite good, to be fair.
I'm quite surprised by that, to be honest. We don't usually get the director of cricket for those.
Yeah, he was. Well, he obviously was the assistant and used to play, didn't he? But yeah, he's got a decent voice, to be fair.
Fair play. Okay, at least it's not, sounding like a cat being dragged then. I don't think that would be appreciated by anyone up at Lancs. Or moving on to the next one, Crofty. This is a classic here at the podcast, and you are going to have to throw someone under the metaphorical bus. Who are the best and worst dressed up at Lancs?
Right. Best would probably be Rob Jones. Yeah, smart. Tries to stay with the times. And probably worst, Luke Wood or Blatherwick. They live together and I think they share clothes. But yeah, they try too hard. They've got multicoloured everything. They're just too bright and shiny. So yeah, it's Blatherwick or Wood.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough. I think if they come onto the podcast, we'll have to get their opinions on that. It'd be interesting if they said each other for worst dressed. Yeah. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see on a future episode of TCCP. Moving on to our penultimate teammates question then, Crofty. Who is the dressing room joker at Lancs? Who's always pulling a practical joke in the dressing room?
It's probably Tom Bailey. Yeah, Tom Bailey or myself. One of a couple of the older ones. The old ones are the best.
We've heard that quite often on the podcast. Yeah. I must admit, I think your name's cropped up a couple of times. I'm pretty sure Tom Bailey has as well. So
Yeah, probably.
Some app choices,
we don't cut people's socks or anything like that. But,
What is the go-to?
Stick a pound on the floor and see. We did that this year. Skipper tried to pick it up. He was there for a couple of minutes and they realised it was stuck on the floor and things like that.
It's a good one, that. I must admit. One that we usually get on the podcast, other than the cutting holes in socks, is sticking things to the ceiling for players who are under 6 foot. That's always a good one. Right then, Crofty. Moving on to our final one then of today's teammate segment. Arguably my favourite one, to be honest, from TCCP teammates. It used to be I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, but it's no longer the time of year, unfortunately. We're in 2022 now, and summer is fast approaching. So the final question for today is, who is the most likely in the Lancashire dressing room to appear on Love Island?
Oh,
there's a few candidates here.
There is, yeah. Yeah, the Blatherwick and Wood would be up there. Hurty would be up there. He'd love to get his rig out. Probably Liam Livingston, I reckon.
I would agree. You know, when I saw that question first up, I thought Liam Livingston or a bit of a wild card, maybe Phil Salt.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. Not to know Phil too much yet, but yeah, on the outside. But yeah, don't want to piss him off.
Probably for the best, to be honest. But
yeah,
no, he's decent looking chap. Phil Salt, the bottom with Dan Bradman, as we call him here on the podcast. And yeah, he's going to be an exciting signing. Honestly, Lancs fans, get yourself down to Old Trafford in 2022 to see a little bit of Salton Livingston. What a ridiculous top order that is for Lancashire heading into this year's blast. But Crofty, before we wrap up today's podcast and say our goodbyes then for today's episode, 2022, we've alluded to it throughout today's podcast. I'm guessing that Lancs as a club, aspirations-wise, will be looking at silverware, potentially across multiple formats. But from a personal perspective, in both a playing and a coaching perspective as well, what would you like to achieve in 2022 heading into this summer?
I think on a personal note, it probably aligns with the team. Obviously want to win something. My stage of my career now at 37, you don't know how long you got left. So I think to win a trophy at the stage of my career would be fantastic, really. And yeah, for me playing, I'd like to be involved as possible, really, in all three formats. So yeah, it's something that'll keep me going. First and foremost, I try and get inside and stay in the side and really compete. And if it's not meant to be, and then try and help whoever is in the side to perform and ultimately try and win some silverware. So yeah, it'd probably be to win something and have a good time whilst doing it.
Yeah, that's the important thing. You've got to enjoy yourself during the county grind because it is hard work. But then again, if you do win a trophy, it's immensely rewarding. And the relationships as well that you build, the friendships, I mean, they can last for life. So yeah, definitely enjoy yourself, Crofty, heading into the 2022 season. But it goes without saying, I know that my Lancashire co-host, if he was here, he'd be saying good luck. So Crofty, wishing both yourself and Lancashire County Cricket Club nothing but the very best of luck heading into 2022. I do fancy the Red Roses' chances. I must admit, I do think they're going to be a strong contender across formats. So I'll be watching on very, very eagerly. And to be fair, I'll probably make a couple of trips up to Old Trafford. I do like it as a venue. So yeah, just watch out for that, Lancs fans. If you want to say hello, please feel free to do so. But Crofty, that pretty much brings us to an end to today's episode of the podcast. Just before we end, though, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites? I know you've got your coaching YouTube channel, for example. Do you have anything like that to promote?
Yeah, so yeah, recently started that just before Christmas. So on YouTube, Steam Croft Coaching. So I've been looking to sort of get that going throughout the summer and pre-season. Hopefully, bringing some good sort of talks with a few of our players and a few that I've played around the world with. If you keep your eyes peeled for that and subscribe to that channel, that would be fantastic.
Absolutely, Crofty. Yep, I could not agree more. Give it a subscribe, give it a watch. I like the sound of that as well. Can we have any hints? I'm not going to say spoilers, but in terms of some of the names, any clues, any suggestions who they might be?
There's some big ones. Let's say that some big ones in world cricket. So yeah, don't wanna, it's not 100% concrete yet, but we've got some good things lined up. So yeah, keep watching.
Well, that sounds very, very promising, Crofty. And yeah, I'll keep my eyes peeled for that. Definitely. That'll be very, very interesting to come across heading into this summer. But yeah, basically, that is pretty much it from us two here for today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. Crofty, just want to say one final thank you for today for giving me your time. It's been an absolute pleasure talking all things county cricket and Lancs with you today. And as you know, you're always welcome back here on the County Cricket Podcast. Fingers crossed next time, with Joe present for the recording as well. But that is pretty much it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.